The Hidden Danger of Glyphosate, an interview with Professor Don Huber. Glyphosate is the active ingredient in the herbicide Roundup, patented by Monsanto in 1974. It is now the world's most widely used weed killer. About 100 million pounds are applied to U.S. farms and lawns every year, according to the EPA. Farmers sprayed enough of the chemical to cover every acre of cropland in the entire world with nearly a half pound of Roundup, according to a 2016 study published in the journal Environmental Sciences Europe. Monsanto also holds patents on genetically engineered Roundup-ready corn, soy, sorghum, sugar beets, cotton, and alfalfa, with wheat under development. When these plants are being sprayed in the field, allegedly only the weeds that grow among them are killed. Roundup is used not only in industrial agriculture, but on vineyards, golf courses, public parks, and in schools, in road maintenance, and by backyard gardeners. Curiously, the more modest uses in schools and gardens have recently come to national attention. In May 2019, a jury in Oakland, California, ordered Monsanto to pay a husband and wife more than $2 billion in damages after finding that its Roundup weed killer caused their cancers. This is the third jury to conclude that Monsanto failed to warn consumers of its flagship product's dangers. The juries were presented evidence that glyphosate caused the breakdown of their immune systems and led to non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Thousands of additional lawsuits against Monsanto, which the Bayer Corporation acquired for $66 billion in 2018, are queued up in state and federal courts. Monsanto's claim that Roundup was safe for human beings is now being challenged, and the question raised, who and what else is impacted by glyphosate and the other ingredients in Roundup? Here's the Indian physicist and seed collector Vandana Shiva, who asked that question years ago.
Monsanto knew in 1985 that glyphosate is a carcinogen. And now when the WHO announced it, they tried to pounce on the WHO because they got used to pouncing on so many scientists and putting pressure to get papers retracted, scientists fired. I could go on and on about all my friends who've lost jobs. The only reason I haven't, I gave it up voluntarily in 1982. There's nothing they can take away from me. So knowingly, they have caused harm. I'll give you a very simple example. They always say Roundup can't affect human beings because we don't have something called the shikimate pathway, which is what plants have and bacteria have. And it's because the plants have it, when they spray Roundup, it disrupts that pathway. What they ignore or deliberately don't tell us is this human body is 600 trillion cells, most of which are bacteria. Only 600 million are human. All those cells in our gut are getting knocked out with glyphosate residues. And if you look at the inflammatory diseases, the intestinal disorders, the fact that it's the bacteria in the gut that produce the enzymes that help the neurotransmitters, when you realize that the gut and the brain is connected, they are stealing our brains. This deliberate harm, with full knowledge, is a crime.
That was Vandana Shiva. I recorded her in Willits, California, in September 2015. Next, you will hear from Dr. Don Huber, professor emeritus at Purdue University. Huber studied Roundup and later the associated Roundup-ready crops and their risks to farm animals being fed Roundup-ready soy, corn, and alfalfa beginning in 1974. He is the scientist who raised the safety issue of glyphosate in 2011 with the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture and made headlines all over the world. Huber's warning was ignored by the Obama administration. Don Huber says that the herbicide glyphosate kills by giving plants a heightened form of AIDS. Glyphosate affects bacteria by killing some that are essential to the plants and to humans and animals that consume them, while at the same time strengthening some pathogens that are harming plants and soil. Don Huber was interviewed via a somewhat scratchy Skype connection by Uwe Altner, publisher of the Vitalstoff blog that focuses on nutrition in the European Union. He begins by asking Professor Don Huber about his academic interests and how he got involved in Roundup research. If you are not a chemist by training or interest, you will be surprised to find out how exactly different elements interact to kill or to nourish. If you are interested in nutrition and health, this will inspire you, even though some terms and processes may be a little hard to follow. In any case, you can always go to TUC Radio's podcast and hear this conversation again for free. That's tucradio.org. Here is Professor Don Huber.
I'm a soil microbiologist, plant pathologist, plant disease specialist. Worked for almost 60 years of research in microbial ecology and other areas there. Also have had quite an extensive involvement in human diseases and epidemiology. If you have healthy plants, you have healthy people. If you have healthy soils, you can have healthy plants. In 1974, when glyphosate was first released and commercialized as an herbicide, I started seeing things happening in the soil and then from a plant disease standpoint that didn't fit the information that we were being provided from the company, both as far as its mode of action and its impact on the environment. I was seeing some rather strange activities in the environment, and especially the expression of increased severity of a number of plant diseases, that if the mechanism that we were being told that this herbicide works was really the active ingredient or the active mechanism, those activities, those processes should not occur. And yet we're seeing them consistently. I initiated some research just out of curiosity to see if maybe in understanding several of these diseases that we managed primarily only through nutrition and management procedures that would influence nutrition, was to see if I had missed something that would be of benefit to us in more effective control. The more research that I did, then greater concern I had, because this is a very unique chemical. It's a very simple chemical. It's just a synthetic amino acid, the simplest of the amino acids, glycine, with a phosphonate group, a PO3 group on it. Turns out that that PO3 group is not a normal component or a normal chemistry for most products in the environment. So this synthetic amino acid then behaves very different than it would if it had a phosphate group rather than a phosphonate group, a PO4 rather than a PO3. There are very few organisms in the environment that can degrade glyphosate. So that, for one thing, it's very persistent in the environment. There are reports of half-life as long as 22 years. And the Australian government's testing of their soils here a few years ago, and we see this also in some of ours, that you can account for 20 years of glyphosate application in the soil today because there has been very little degradation or breakdown of this chemical because it's synthetic and we haven't had those generations of time for organisms to evolve that can break that carbon phosphonate linkage especially. That's usually the sticking point from a degradation standpoint. But it has many other very unique characteristics. It's considered a 100-year chemical because of its broad spectrum of activity in spite of its very simple chemical composition. Biologically, it's a very unique chemical both in the soil, in our plants, in our animals, and in our own bodies. It's a very powerful mineral chelator. In other words, it can grab on to other elements, change their characteristics so that they're either more soluble, less soluble. In this case, it makes those essential minerals that we have to have for our physiology or biological systems all have to have those minerals. It makes them unavailable physiologically, and that's how it really functions as an herbicide, as an antibiotic, and as a general biocide, is by depriving our enzymes of the cofactors of the keys that would turn them on or make them function. It merely immobilizes those minerals. Doesn't have to be highly involved in the chemistry of enzymes because it makes the key for those enzymes non-available and therefore changes the physiology, changes the biology of the environment very dramatically, whether it's our gut microbiome, whether it's the soil, or whether it's the plant. Similar effect there.
Right. So you have already mentioned its property as a chelator. Over here in Europe, the discussion about glyphosate has been a very strange one. Anyone who raises concerns about this substance is considered simply like a quack or like a layperson who doesn't know anything about it and doesn't understand that this chemical is very safe to be used as a help for the farmers in agriculture. This of course refers to the inventor of the company who first patented glyphosate as a herbicide, Monsanto, saying to politicians, to regulators all over the world, I think they're saying that glyphosate is safe because it disrupts a shikimate pathway, an enzymatic pathway, which humans don't have. This is not the whole truth, is it?
As a chelator, glyphosate was patented 10 years before Monsanto patented as an herbicide. It was used to clean steam pipes and boilers because it's able to grab on to your calcium, magnesium, and iron, those minerals that tend to give you the scale, can grab on to them, change their solubility or the ability to remove those in. But it's those minerals that have to be available then as the cofactors for our proteins. 80% of the proteins in our body or in a biological system are metalloproteins. That means that they have a metal element, an essential element that's associated with them. That can be used for electron transfer, as we see with our brain functions, or as a cofactor, as I mentioned, the key for those enzymes that provide the catalyst then that the enzyme can function with. So that it was first patented and used for cleaning steam pipes and boilers in 1964. 1974 that Monsanto patented it, and they actually went to Purdue University and asked a very well-known, very highly qualified biochemist at Purdue University, where I was located as a professor, and ask him if he would determine if this chemical would inhibit the shikimate pathway. Now, the shikimate pathway is secondary metabolism for all biological systems except mammals. Mammals are the only living entity or biological system that doesn't have the innate characteristics or capabilities for the shikimate pathway. Now, they didn't ask him how many other enzymes it might influence. To my knowledge, they asked him if it would inhibit the shikimate pathway, which of course it does. It's a very strong manganese chelator, which is required for the FMN cofactor. You have to have a reduced FMN, and the FMN reductase enzyme that provides that actual cofactor for the EPS enzyme in the shikimate pathway has to have the reduced FMN. So glyphosate actually chelates that manganese. It also chelates with cobalt, which is another enzyme right at the start of the shikimate pathway, so that there are many enzymes that it actually shuts down in the shikimate pathway, but also outside of that pathway. It does it by chelating, by pulling the key out of the ignition on those enzymes, if you want to look at it that way. That has ramifications then for all biological systems. Even though mammals don't have the shikimate pathway, all of our aromatic amino acids, there are three essential aromatic amino acids, tryptophan, tyrosine, and phenylalanine, that are required for biological systems. All of our neurochemistry originates through tryptophan. We have hormone systems and other things that originate through phenylalanine and through tyrosine. So if they're essential amino acids for us, but we can't synthesize them ourselves. For mammals, those amino acids are synthesized by our gut microbiology. The bacteria in our GI tract are the organisms that provide us with our amino acids. Now, we get a few from plants, from seeds and other sources there, but it's primarily from the microorganisms in our GI tract. So when they say, well, it can never be toxic to humans or to mammals because we don't have the shikimate pathway, it's only partially true. In our cells, we don't have it, but in our GI tract, which we now refer to as our eighth organ, because there are 10 times more cells in our GI tract, in our gastrointestinal system, than there are in the rest of our body. It's very critical for us. When you have gut dysbiosis or a change in the balance in those organisms in your GI tract, we have all kinds of mental problems like bipolar, schizophrenia, depression, but the GI tract is also the source for our immune system, so that we then become very susceptible to many of the pathogens also in our GI tract, the Clostridium botulinum that causes sudden infant death syndrome, or that causes chronic fatigue syndrome, or leaky gut and inflammatory bowel from Clostridium butyricum and Clostridium botulinum, Clostridium perfringens. All of those organisms are resistant to glyphosate, but all of the organisms that we rely on for nutrition, for our neural chemistry, all of those functions, all of those organisms are very dependent on having those minerals available, and glyphosate is very toxic as a very powerful broad-spectrum antibiotic against the beneficial organisms in our GI tract as well as in the stomach or the intestinal tract of animals and bees and lizards and bats and all other organisms have to have those minerals, and glyphosate is a very toxic antibiotic against the beneficial organisms that would provide that support for all living systems, essentially.
Right. You have mentioned the immune system, which is stemming from our intestinal tract, from our microbiome. There is a very close connection between our innate immune system and the immune system which we get from the bacteria we are providing a home to, if you allow this expression. There is, in terms of toxicity of glyphosate out in the field, there is also a similarity, at least if I understood correctly what you have been lecturing about. So there you say that the plant is not killed by glyphosate itself. In one talk you mentioned that plant in sterile soil cannot be killed by glyphosate, but that the killing also takes place by an impairment of the plant's immune system. Can you elaborate on this, maybe?
Yes. Again, the shikimate pathway is secondary metabolism. It's not a primary metabolism that would kill directly, but it is responsible for much of the defense mechanism that the plant has against soil-borne pathogens. So that this would be your fungal and bacterial pathogens that are in the soil, cause disease, and it's very toxic to the organisms that would normally suppress those soil-borne diseases, but it stimulates the pathogens. Some of those pathogens are a few of the organisms that can actually utilize glyphosate as a nutrient resource, but their virulence, their ability to cause disease is greatly increased, and it's a very rapid colonization because these organisms are common in almost all of our soils. You put a little bit of glyphosate on the leaf of a soybean plant, for instance, and in a matter of 3 to 4 hours, it's already moving out of the root system into the soil, where its antibiotic activity suppresses the normal biological control organisms that would suppress the pathogens, would control those disease organisms. And those are taken out of the picture, out of the ecology, and you then have a stimulation of the fungi that the Fusarium and Rhizoctonia, Pythium, Phytophthora, all of those many soil-borne disease organisms that then are no longer suppressed, they're no longer in jail in the soil. You've opened the door for them, and it's a matter of just a very few hours before they have colonized that plant that now has AIDS, if you want to look at it that way. Its immune system has been compromised, its defenses have been shut down, so that plant is very rapidly colonized. This is one of the reasons why it takes 4 to 5 days, or maybe even a little longer, to kill the plants when they're treated with glyphosate. It's not like pouring acid on them or vinegar, a weak acid, some of those things that we do use that are fairly quick in acting, just a few hours and the plant becomes brown. The plant treated with glyphosate first becomes yellow as the minerals are all tied up and as those enzyme systems are compromised or as they're shut down. And then it's the organisms, the soil-borne organisms, that come in and finish off the plant or that destroy those tissues that have no defense against that. The extracellular enzymes and the penetration of the mycelium of the fungus and on those things. So that its mode of action is very unique, very different than many of our chemical weed killers, which do have a primary mode of action as an herbicide. If you read the 1995 review on glyphosate, this is 20 years after it was commercialized as an herbicide, they state that the glyphosate inhibits the shikimate pathway, but the herbicidal mode of action is actually unknown. Well, it was known 10 years before that. There are a number of papers showing, as I stated, that you can't kill a plant with glyphosate in sterile soil because it's the fungi that kill it. You give the plant a bad case of AIDS and then shut down the defense mechanism, and it's those soil-borne organisms that kill do the actual killing of the plant. I've demonstrated this, and others have demonstrated it in various ways. If you block the movement of glyphosate into the root system by severing the vascular system, it will only stunt the plant for several weeks, and then as it recovers those minerals from the soil that have been chelated, it will resume growth and take off. All of your lateral buds will take off, and you end up with a big bush there. Glyphosate has to move down, has to compromise the immune system or the defenses of the plant, and stimulate the soil-borne fungi by changing the soil ecology. It's not just working on one organism or two organisms. It's really a very dramatic change in the soil biology, just as it has a very dramatic change in our GI tract, in our own intestines and colon, that you'll find people with gout, for instance, as Dr. Seneff has a recent paper on, shows that people with gout have a very different microbiome in their GI tract than people who don't have gout. When you have glyphosate, it changes that whole relationship because of its toxicity, antibiotic activity against the beneficial organisms, and its stimulation of the organisms that are very deleterious.
That was Dr. Don Huber, Professor Emeritus at Purdue University. He studied Roundup and later the associated Roundup Ready crops, beginning in 1974. He was interviewed by Uwe Altner, publisher of the Vital Stoff blog that focuses on nutrition in the European Union. Come back for part two of The Hidden Danger of Glyphosate with Professor Don Huber when TUC Radio returns. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. My name is Maria Gelöden. Thank you for listening.